A rapid succession of animal eyes. BBC Natural World. Thuggish vultures flocking around a carcass and a talon clutching a toothy jawbone.
Vultures. The most maligned of the world's birds. The undertakers. The cleaners.
Cut the fat off the back of a baboon!
Able to strip a carcass in minutes, these birds have got to be tough and aggressive to survive in one of the most savage environments on Earth.
To the feast! With the meat!
In a tangle of black and white wings, a group squabble over a piece of meat.
But there's more to these birds than meets the eye. And I want to prove it. I think they're charismatic, intelligent, even beautiful. Maybe we've got them all wrong.
Vultures, Beauty in the Beast, with Charlie Hamilton James. A lioness's face up close, her honey blonde fur flecked with ants, then a wily cheetah on the prowl. The lioness stalking through shoulder-high grass, then the cheetah chasing a young wildebeest.
The plains of East Africa. It's here, on these vast grasslands, where predators and prey play out their life and death struggles.
A hyena tearing out entrails.
And it's here where vultures thrive, profiting from the death of others.
Vultures huddled around a piece of meat, pecking at it. One bird standing apart, its head and beak soaked with blood.
Vultures are one of the few animals known to rely solely on carcasses of the dead for food.
A vulture keeping a beady eye out.
It's a niche existence, but one suited to this savage paradise. I've been filming wildlife on the African plains for 20 years. Nowhere on Earth can match it for its drama. But vultures are a family of birds normally overlooked. They're creatures to film when you're killing time, waiting for something more glamorous to show up. I've always had a sort of morbid fascination for them. There are 23 species of vulture worldwide, but I've come to take a closer look at East African vultures to prove that beneath that ugly facade lurks a creature as fascinating and beautiful as any other. You might have to bear with me on this one.
A white van travelling through a heat haze.
The Serengeti National Park in Tanzania. It's February and the plains are empty. Finding vultures is proving to be difficult. It's the end of the dry season, and although there are a few animals out on the plains, there clearly aren't enough of them dying. I assumed the plains would be heaving with vultures, but it's a few days before I find any. And when I do track them down, they seem very hungry.
There's a bit of fighting over a carcass. Charlie's filming them from the van.
I don't know how anyone's getting any eating done, because every time anyone gets their head and neck into the carcass to actually get some meat, someone else comes along and just batters them from behind. And they just end up fighting the whole time. And the most you see them eating for is 8-10 seconds. They really are the most repulsive, disgusting, ugly, vicious, ghoulish sounding anti-heroes, which is probably why I love them so much.
The problem is, I've got no idea what's happening here. It's just a mass of angry birds fighting over a carcass. I know it must be more complex than that. Life always is.
You want some food? food.
Simon Thompson, world vulture expert and nanny.
What a dude.
Come on, look. Food, glorious food, come on. So you can see how big he is.
Simon rescued this Rapel's griffon vulture after an eagle tried to kill it. If anyone can let me into the secrets of vultures, it's him and his friend.
So do I pick a piece up?
Yep. And, oops.
You're supposed to eat this bit, not me.
Well, you can see that it's pretty useless at eating on its own.
Because it's just going to pull it around, isn't it?
Yeah, it needs to have a heavy body behind it, something that you can... Yeah, so hold it down really hard, like this.
Right.
And then it can...
Otherwise it's just going to pull it like that and not get anything off it.
So now you're being a heavy mammal.
Right.
And now it can use that bill to good effect by pulling back.
That's so efficient, isn't it? Look at that.
The captive vulture pecks at the juicy bone in Simon's garden.
Now, it couldn't eat that, see?
Why not?
Ooh.
So should I... Why couldn't it eat it?
Because it wants to eat little tiny pieces of it.
Right, so if I hold it and let it...
Yeah. And the other thing is, try to cover the food like this. Okay? Right. It'll actually eat out of the middle of your hand.
So it'll go underneath?
Yes, and tuck in underneath and put his head in.
Power is amazing. You really don't appreciate the power and the efficiency of it when you watch them on a kill, do you?
Ow! Not me!
I can't imagine a tool more perfectly designed for stripping meat off a bone than this vulture's beak, when combined with its strong neck and powerful tongue.
That's so delicate, isn't it? Are you looking at yourself in the lens? You are, aren't you? What do you think? Have you seen yourself lately? Well, you're looking pretty good. Have you given him a name?
Yeah, he's called Gollum.
That's just so unfair. You really have bought into the whole stereotype.
Obviously, I fall in love with Gollum straight away. Who wouldn't? He has charisma, and for a bird, he seems full of character and intelligence. He's also surprisingly clean, and despite trying to bite me, very well behaved.
Try and clean his bill for him. Just grab his head and just sort of rub your hands up and down his bill.
Why not?
He really appreciates it.
He don't want to play with me. He doesn't know me.
So this.
Gollum's one of the only captive Rapel's vultures in Africa.
Very good.
And Simon hopes to release him one day.
You goofy bird.
Understanding how Gollum eats is fascinating.
It's just something to clean your bill on, hey?
But I want to see vultures feeding in the wild. And right now is the perfect time.
A swathe of dark storm cloud hovers above a cheetah on the plain. Hunched over and drenched, a vulture stands in the pouring rain, oblivious to the water dripping from its dark feathers.
The long-awaited rains have finally come to the southern Serengeti. Too late for some.
A zebra lies dead in the grass, watched closely by a vigilant vulture. A lion shakes out his mane, then calls out. Now flying through the clouds.
Rain is as important to the vultures as it is to any animal here. Because following the rains are the herds. The great wildebeest migration is just a few days away, and everyone's waiting for it.
The herd advancing in a cloud of dust.
It won't be long before this place becomes vulture heaven as they fly in from all over East Africa. So it's the perfect time for me to really get to know them and see them at their best. Simon wants to show me that there's a lot more going on when vultures are feeding. than meets the eye. So we've come out to the Serengeti in search of carcasses.
Finding a partially eaten wildebeest carcass on the ground, they stop the car, then get out to investigate.
Last night, isn't it?
It must have been. You see the way that's all been cut right through here?
Yeah.
In sizes or something. This for vultures, honestly, this is the best thing ever. Nice and fresh, and they do like fresh meat.
How long would they take to strip something like this down? To basically skin and bone?
Well, about 100 vultures take them about 20 minutes.
Really?
Each one eating about 500 grams or kilogram.
20 minutes?
20 minutes,
that's
yeah.
Incredible, isn't it?
They just come in, can clean this thing up within minutes. You see all these white lesions here?
Yeah.
They're going all the way spread throughout the whole of the lungs, everywhere, really. And it looks to me like it might have bovine TB. Whatever it is, it's certainly diseased.
So if that's bovine TB, it's basically very contagious to other animals that could then pick that up and spread it.
Certainly, especially to other wildebeests, so, yeah.
So what you want, really, is a cleaning crew to come in and completely clean it and get rid of all that disease, don't you?
Yeah, and guess who that's going to be?
OK, let's get these cameras in it. When I say in it, I mean in it.
All right, here we go.
I want Simon to explain exactly what's going on when vultures turn up and fight over this carcass. So in order to dissect the action on the obliging wildebeest, we rig it with cameras, which we can then watch on a monitor back in the car. Simon then insists we get well back, as the vultures will be nervous of us. But it's not long before their keen eyes spot the kill.
How far would they be able to spot a kill like this from?
Would be surprised they can see at least 20 kilometres, you know, especially other vultures going in. These things really are amazingly cautious. They come in, a few of them send out a couple of scouts beforehand. They go in and have a look. Sometimes they just fly over, sit in the trees and a long distance away. Then they all start massing around, and basically they're sort of pulling straws, you know, who's going to be the first one to go in. And it's usually the less cautious, you know, juveniles who really don't know what's up. And they just go in there first. And then if he doesn't get harmed, all the other adults and other species come in.
The other vultures fly in after the scout.
This is sort of the typical idea what most people have about the African savanna, you know, a predator kills and then all the vultures come piling in. But no, they're very cautious. They know, as we do, that thing was killed by a carnivore. So they're not going to come in a hurry.
Simon, I got a vulture on the ground.
I'm amazed how cautious the vultures are.
And they're coming right on. Yeah. So they're on the carcass. They're feeding right. Straight away.
Yeah, but now ice has been broken, everybody's just going to pile in.
So yeah, look,
every man for himself now.
Armed with cameras on the ground and a long lens in the car, Simon and I can get a really good look at the action.
To me, this looks like complete chaos. Everyone fighting over the food. Actually reminds me of Sunday lunch when I was a kid. But is there any order to this?
If you were to take a photograph from directly above, you'd see the carcass in the middle, the dominant vultures immediately eating it, the less dominant vultures around the outside, marabou stalks, hooded vultures in a sort of a growing ring. So it looks like chaos right now, but there is some order. Now you can see when they really are getting very angry, they stretch out their necks and they just make that horrible hissing roar. And they're just bashing into one another. They're real thugs, aren't they?
One vulture spreads its brown and white wings, then closes in menacingly on a competitor.
They have incredibly strong necks, so when you see them actually biting one another, you think they're doing terrible damage. But their necks are a bit like pythons and snakes. They have such an incredibly strong neck. They can pull about 20 kg, 40-pound pull, straight pull with just the muscles of their neck.
So vultures might be ugly to us, but they're actually beautifully designed to do what they do. They have long necks to reach right up inside the carcass, which, critically, have few feathers so they don't get dirty and store bacteria. They've got strong hooked beaks for ripping flesh and a powerful tongue with backward-facing spines. And listening to Simon, I realise there does seem to be some order in this chaos, a hierarchy decided by age, bluff and species. There's not just one species of vulture here.
What's this vulture here, then?
That one's a... They're both whitebacks. Whitebacks have the black bill, slightly smaller.
Charlie pans the camera round.
That one's the other one. The Rupel's a totally different skull shape. It has an ivory-coloured bill. Adults have that pale yellow eye. Whitebacks have a dark eye all the time.
And then another vulture turns up. A lappet-faced vulture. He looks bigger than the others, and a little more handsome, if I dare say.
I love that strut, that attitude they've got. Look at that guy, stunning-looking creature. He's just piling in there, saying, "I'm the man."
This guy is clearly the boss, and the other vultures know it, backing off and giving him the space he needs to feed.
He is tearing away at the edges of the scapula here, tearing off the sinew. He's not eating any of the raw meat.
He's eating these tiny little stringy bits of tendon, isn't he? There's all that meat there.
You know, this film really is very valuable because you can see precisely what he's eating. You wouldn't think that that is going to sustain a huge vulture.
So, each vulture species has a niche. The lappet-faced eats the tendons and visceral tissue. The Rupels dominate the best meat on the carcass. And the smaller white-back vultures get what they can.
A bulging stomach.
Within just half an hour, they've cleaned up the disease-ridden wildebeest. Their stomachs are full, and they've stored more meat in their bulging crops ready to digest later. Some are now so stuffed that they struggle to fly. Others, however, have chicks to feed and head off on a long journey back to the nest. And that's exactly where we're going next. Simon tells me that vultures make very dedicated parents. So we head for their nest sites, across the border from Tanzania, into Kenya, en route to Lake Kwenya. This hidden wildlife oasis on the edge of the Rift Valley is crisscrossed with high cliffs, perfect nesting sites for Rupel's vultures. Rupel's vultures don't just nest anywhere. They're very sensitive to disturbance and very picky about where they'll lay their eggs. So finding a nest to film isn't easy.
Charlie and Simon are abseiling down a cliff.
Ah, a few vultures, Simon.
It's pretty good, isn't it?
Look at that. Wow, it's nice to be in their world, isn't it, on their level.
Yeah, this is a totally different experience from out on the open.
Look at this guy, he's just coming right in to have a look.
The vulture cruising past.
You have a huge amount coming straight over your head over this way.
Wow. That's incredible. Wow. That's a lot of vultures, isn't it?
It's looking good today, isn't it?
100 or so?
Hey, 100?
What do you reckon?
Looks like it could be. Well, very few people in the world get to see this kind of thing.
At this level?
Yeah.
That's pretty stunning.
Simon's keen to show me an old nest, which is apparently made of a rather unusual material.
So, there you go.
What, this is a nest?
This is a solid lump of vulture guano.
That's amazing.
That's vulture poo. over hundreds of years.
Really?
Yeah.
It's just incredible.
Who knows? It could be thousands of years old. This is a very dry environment. There's hardly any rain here. Something as thick as this must have been built up very slowly.
Really quite disgusting at the same time that I'm rubbing and tapping on what is essentially a massive great pile of poo. And you're sitting in it.
I'm sitting.
Simon and I are after an active nest, though. One preferably with a decent-sized chick in it.
I like those guys there. That's nice, hard, solid rock.
The one's
there.
Out on the right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we'll go for those ones.
Okay.
Early the next morning, Simon descends the face to find a good nest and install a camera.
Wearing climbing gear, he abseils down onto a ledge, then negotiates a way around the rocky red cliff face. Far below, sun-kissed plains stretch towards hazy mountains in the distance. Keeping a firm grip on his line, Simon stops and looks around a rock at a chick in a nest.
Hello, buddy. Hi. Oh, very cute.
The chick sits still, pretending it's not there, hoping Simon won't see him. Back up top, I can monitor what the camera's seeing on my laptop.
Yeah, that's it. That's spot on.
Which means we can watch the birds without disturbing them.
Simon joins Charlie up top.
Have a look at this.
In a makeshift shelter, they look at the camera feed on a laptop.
Has anyone ever filmed vultures here before?
No, never before. Not here in Quenya. In fact, the whole species, very little has been done like this.
That's actually a pretty big chick, isn't it? How old do you reckon it is?
It's deceptive because physically it's very big, but it's only about 45 to 60 days old. Has at least another month or so to go.
Right.
So,
I suppose an animal that big needs, certainly a chick, and it's going to need a lot of food, isn't it?
He needs at least a kilo, maybe a bit more a day.
A kilo?
A kilo of food. So mum and dad are coming back, feeding him in a soup of, nutritious guts and livers and all.
A kilo of that a day.
But Simon and I are concerned. We haven't seen either of the parents visiting the nest.
An aerial view across a vast plain that's peppered with animals.
Back in the southern Serengeti, and the wildebeest have finally arrived. 1.4 million of them. Around 500,000 tons of fresh meat. And when they arrive, they calve. No other animal is as important to the vultures here as the wildebeest. Vultures mainly eat the bodies of animals that have died naturally, of old age or starvation. And it's the other scavengers and predators that benefit from vultures, not the other way round. Hyenas use vultures, like their eyes in the sky. Where they circle may well be food.
Two vultures squaring up to each other on the ground.
Vultures and hyenas rely on each other, but their relationship is a fractious one. Without hyenas, the vultures can't break through the tough hide of the wildebeest and are only able to eat it through the nose, mouth, and anus.
A vulture feeding through an opening.
Competition for these openings becomes intense, and all the fighting means that few vultures actually get to feed.
A vulture sits poised, with a thread of sunlight outlining his noble head and outstretched wings. A hyena arrives.
So the vultures need the hyenas with their powerful jaws to butcher the carcass and provide access to the meat inside. The problem then is that the hyenas want to eat it all themselves. All the vultures can do is watch.
Two more hyenas join the feast.
Some vultures do build up the courage to creep in closer. But hyenas will kill them given the opportunity.
A hyena sees them off with ease.
But pestering is something vultures are very good at.
One opportunist creeps up to the carcass and starts feeding on the other side to the hyena, who's gnawing with relish the flesh-covered bones. Another vulture plods away. Later, the feeding frenzy has quietened down.
Where vultures and hyenas gather, black-backed jackals are sure to follow.
One skulks in, keeping low.
Jackals are consummate thieves and rely not on size and strength, but bravery and speed to get past the hyenas. If you want to eat at the carcass, you've got to have guts.
A jackal bites the backside of a feeding hyena and pandemonium breaks out. In slow motion, the jackal then attacks a vulture, who spreads its wings defensively. A pair of lappet-faced vultures look on in beady-eyed wonder at the melee of flapping wings. The jackal sees off his avian competitors, then keeps trying to return to the carcass.
The problem for the jackal, though, is he's actually getting a little too big for his boots. And someone needs to show him who's boss.
As the other birds look on, one of the lappet-faced vultures sinks its claws into the jackal, enveloping it with a beat of its powerful dark brown wings. The jackal wriggles free, then runs off, kicking up the dust as it goes. The victorious vulture lands with both feet firmly on the ground.
Weighing in at 10 kilograms, with a wingspan of nearly 3 meters, few jackals are foolish enough to mess with the might of a lappet-faced vulture.
The vulture leans forward to inspect what's left of the carcass, like an inquisitive professor in a black cloak.
Back at the nest in Quenya, and Simon and I finally see what we've been waiting for.
Oh, look, there's an adult. Ah, look, just landed. That's great.
This is the first time we've seen one of the parent birds visiting the nest.
That's a relief, actually.
It is.
When we put, you know, you put the camera that close, the last thing you want to do is disturb them.
Well, it's getting hot, isn't it? Look at the chick. I'm so happy to see Mum's back.
Yeah.
The mother clambers towards the guano-covered ledge, where her chick sits on a rudimentary nest of twigs.
Is that the chick begging, that noise?
That's definitely a begging sound.
Carrying food in their crop rather than digesting it in their stomach means that this parent bird can bring food back from the Serengeti over 100 miles away and still keep it reasonably fresh.
There you go, to regurgitate.
So that's why she's moving her beak
and and the tongue is literally pulling the food out of her throat.
The chick's beak reaches into the mother's so it can tug out the regurgitated food.
Quite disgusting. it's weird because it's very lovely in adult feeding chick, but it's quite disgusting at the same time.
The mother shakes her head and neck to bring the food back up. Then her hungry chick guzzles its dinner. The mother has dark and light brown wings, with a buff collar around her fleshy pink neck and bald head. The chick's plumage is much lighter.
It's so funny seeing them in the nest like this and not scrapping over a rotten piece of meat on the plains. And they just suddenly look like stunningly beautiful, magnificent birds rather than these sort of beggars scrapping over a carcass, don't they?
The mother keeps a lookout.
Anything that happens on this nest over the next few days is going to be very valuable. We've never had an opportunity to look at these things that close before.
As we watched the nest over the next few days, it became clear to us that it was only being visited by one adult. Simon assumed it was the mother. What had happened to the father, we don't know. But with only one parent, the chick's chances of survival are slim. Finding a kilo of meat a day for the chick puts an enormous pressure on the single mum. It means travelling huge distances in search of carrion. The vultures are designed for this. Rapel's vultures have a wingspan of around 2.5 metres, which are shaped for gliding. They also have specialised haemoglobin in their blood. It allows them to fly at extremely high altitude. They've been recorded flying at 11,000 metres, higher than Everest, higher than any other bird. There's now plenty of food to be had on the plains. There's also plenty of competition. To find enough food for herself and her chick, the mother's going to have to be assertive and aggressive. But just how aggressive do vultures actually get?
This camera is a very cool bit of kit. It's a specialist high-speed camera, and what it will allow me to do is slow the action down on the vultures. And when I say slow it down, I mean I can slow it down up to 80 times with this thing. And what that allowed me to do is see in incredible detail exactly what's going on when all the vultures are arguing and fighting over the carcass.
Charlie adjusts the eyepiece, then looks through it.
There's certainly no shortage of scrapping amongst the vultures on this kill, so it's perfect for the high-speed camera. And straight away it starts delivering, giving me a completely new look at the vultures.
The slowed down footage shows one vulture bearing down on another, pecking the back of the other's head and clamping down on its wing. Its own wings are spread out with majestic grace. One vulture with its head bowed low, another in the fray, tearing at bloody sinew.
I'm starting to see just how incredible vultures really are. I'm beginning to see the beauty in the grotesque.
A vulture falling down in the feeding fracas is in danger of being trampled. When another pulls its head out of the carcass, then swings round, a blood-soaked globule flies from its beak. A vulture pulling a stringy, wet morsel out of the carcass. With agility and precision, a vulture flies in, stretching out its legs, then sinking its talons into another's back. With a look of intense concentration, one vulture waits for another to finish feeding. Against a clear blue sky, a vulture slowly descends towards sunny grass, its head bowed so low it's almost level with its feet and with its wings spread wide. The wind gently ruffles the tips of its feathers as it homes in on the carrion, talons outstretched. A vulture in profile, its russet head and buff, feathery collar remaining perfectly still as a feeding skirmish goes on behind it. Flying in, white bony feet first, a vulture extends its hooked claws, its legs swinging back and forth for balance. In the midst of the feeding, a vulture looks up and angrily snaps its beak. When a marabou stork tries to get in on the action, extending its long, thick bill down towards the carcass, a lappet-faced vulture is having none of it, and sees off its larger competitor with a blood-covered morsel still hanging from its beak. Part of the wildebeest's hide has been ripped apart, exposing a gnarly stump of bone, which two repels griffin vultures get into a fight over. A vulture coming into land, its feet hitting the ground one at a time, then its outstretched wings lifting it up a little, before the undulating motion is repeated. Another vulture with lighter plumage crosses paths with it, the pair elegantly covering the ground with graceful, balletic leaps. As the darker bird sidesteps across the grass, its beautiful dark brown wing feathers are fanned out on either side. Next, a pair leap up and squabble over a zebra carcass.
The high-speed camera has revealed another side of vultures to me. They're actually more vicious to each other than I thought. But I can now see how perfectly designed they are to be like this. They're designed to fight. They're designed to be tough. So it might seem nasty and aggressive to us, but to them, it's normal. And ultimately, many of these birds are parents just trying to find enough food to feed their chicks. And they're desperate because the food supply is about to run out. The wildebeest migration doesn't stay long in the southern Serengeti. It soon moves off, following the rains into the western corridor, where the wildebeest disperse.
An aerial view across the vast landscape.
The plains now lie empty. And for the mother vulture, finding enough food for the chick becomes increasingly difficult. Back at the nest in Quenya, the sun beats down. The midday temperature here can reach into the 40s. And on the bare cliff edge, there's no respite for the chick.
The mother stands in front of her chick to give it some shade.
So Mum creates a parasol with her wings. But as I watch her over the days, I notice she seems to be spending a lot of time shading the chick and only bringing food every other day. Perhaps her duties are becoming too stretched. The chick's appetite is now enormous. It's growing fast, some of its feathers at over 2 centimetres a day. Without enough food, its bones will fail to develop properly, and it will probably die. Simon explains to me that vultures breed slowly, only having one chick at a time. The chances of a chick surviving to adulthood are only around 50%. With only one parent to feed and protect it, this chick's chances are much slimmer. And it gets worse. That evening, Simon explains why the chick may only have one parent.
The day started by me having a chat with somebody out in the open plains, and I looked up and I saw a whole kettle of vultures just circling in the sky. But my attention was drawn to a few of them, which were flying in a funny, erratic manner. And then some of them just simply tumbled straight out of the air, fast glide. They flipped and went piling straight into the ground.
Footage of a vulture struggling on the ground with its wings outstretched.
I drove over there to go find him. I couldn't see him, but on my way there, there were carcasses under trees. Virtually everywhere you looked, there were dead animals like dead jackal and hyena. people had poisoned with carbophoran, which is a pesticide used in the agricultural industries. It was widely used here to kill wildlife.
A team of men are throwing the dead birds onto the back of an open cart. One man covers his nose and mouth with his shirt as he lobs another vulture onto the pile. Now two men stand holding a recently killed vulture between them. Its wings are outstretched and its head is motionless, but there's still a hint in its face of the life that was.
It's important to understand that where the actual place is, the poison's put, the effect of the poison doesn't stay there, it moves. So you get mini explosions of deaths occurring. What happened was that the hyena ate the cow, went 9 kilometres away, died. These vultures came down to eat it, and within just a few minutes were comatose and dying. And within a few minutes of that, whatever landed on that dead vulture is also dying. Inside that pile of dead vultures was one living vulture whose face had been staring up at the sun until its eyes was completely burnt and the corneas were burnt. We managed to save that one and release it later. And it was catastrophic for the vultures because we lost 187 vultures in just one poisoning incident.
We've had a big decline in vulture numbers in East Africa. Mm. What effect is that then going to have on everything else, you know, the people and the animals here?
Well, that's a good question, because there's been a similar thing has happened in India, where they've all died from diclofenac poisoning, and it's been banned. We're expecting a recovery. But one of the great arguments that they've had is saying that human health is at risk if all the vultures do go. It's not entirely clear exactly what kind of diseases people will get if there's thousands of dead and rotting animals lying in the street that do not get ingested by vultures. But certainly it causes a huge increase in domestic dogs. And you can see really quite a clear graph of seeing the numbers of incidents of rabies amongst people has shot up in the absence of the vultures. Other things such as just filthy water, you know, disgusting amounts of pathogens just pouring into the main streets. Similar sort of thing obviously can happen here. There are many places, even large conservancies in Kenya, where you will go and see a dead animal, and it just doesn't get consumed by anything other than bacteria and maggots.
From night to day, and a curtain of sunlight sweeping over the plains, the mother vulture takes off from the nest's ledge.
The next morning, the mother leaves the nest early. I assume heading back to the Serengeti in search of any remaining carcasses.
Left by itself at the nest, the growing chick flexes its wings, then stands up.
A female Vera's eagle is on the prowl though, patrolling the cliffs on the hunt for vultures.
As the eagle swoops past, it's mobbed by a small black bird.
It was a Vera's eagle that knocked poor Gollum out of the sky and broke his wing. And an unguarded chick in the nest would make the perfect meal for this enormous bird. With only one parent and an eagle on the prowl, I don't think this chick is going to survive. And I don't want to watch it die. So I decide to leave. I head north in search of other vultures.
A light aircraft's shadow travels across desert plain and cliff.
Poisoning is a serious problem. If India's experience is anything to go by, Africa's problems are only just beginning. India's vultures have faced near extinction. The cost to human health has been staggering. Vultures had consumed around 20 million tons of rotting meat a year. As they declined, the feral dog population, which carries rabies, exploded. This has resulted in over 50,000 extra human deaths from rabies. It's thought the vulture decline has cost India more than $34 billion. Vultures are perhaps far more important to us than we realise. Here in Africa, poisoning is more sinister. Poachers deliberately target vultures for giving away their positions to park rangers. And cattle farmers indirectly kill them when they lace carcasses with carbophoran to poison lions and hyenas.
Now, back on the ground, Simon and Charlie drive past a gathering of marabou storks and vultures.
To understand the effect of poisoning, Simon's studying how vultures move, and more crucially, where they feed.
Simon gets out, then rigs up a carcass, while Charlie watches from the 4x4.
For the last few years, Simon and colleague Darcy Ogada have been catching vultures and fixing satellite transmitters to them in order to gather a greater understanding of their movements. So while Darcy watches the vultures, Simon sets the trap. Simon spent his life working with birds of prey, and catching vultures to him is second nature.
Yeah. Just reverse that, I think.
Moments after he's reversed away, the vultures close in.
Here they come.
The aim is to snare a vulture by the foot and then jump out and grab it before it gets hurt. The chances of it working are quite slim, and our chances of catching the desired young Rapel's vulture are even slimmer.
In a heat haze, jackals are prowling nearby. Simon's keeping his eye on them.
Jackals are the last thing we need. They'll scare off the vultures, and we risk catching one. Not a situation either of us want to be in. It's a waiting game.
For a while, all of the scavengers are congregated around the carcass, but then only the vultures remain.
Got one. Go, Charlie.
Charlie dashes towards the panicking vulture, which is trapped by its foot and dragging the carcass across the ground.
Over his head, quick, Brian. Over the head. Good.
Got it.
Good. Well done. Brilliant. That's exactly what we want.
Yep.
Okay, we're going to carry it to the shade underneath the tree.
A young Rapel's vulture. The perfect specimen. Oh,
so strong, Simon.
Good, nice shady tree.
Yeah.
We won't get heat stress.
The trick now is to get the satellite transmitter on as fast as possible and let the bird go. Darcy and Simon know exactly what they're doing, though, and work fast so they don't stress the bird.
In the shade of the tree, Charlie holds the bird still as Darcy and Simon attach a tracking device to it.
Yeah, they're massively strong things, and really they can carry a kilo of weight. This thing is pretty much the same weight as a cigarette packet, and really weighs less than a quarter of what its lunch weighs. And in time, when the battery's finished, it'll simply fall off its back. It'll be fine.
Within a few minutes, the transmitter's secured to the vulture's back. It'll now transmit a signal giving its location every 15 minutes.
I'm just testing to see it's got lots of flexibility. It can go over its shoulders. Okay.
It feels very heavy, this bird. And very strong.
Okay, let's just put him on the ground and let him go.
The released bird flies away.
That's okay. He's off.
Hold on. You think we did all right, Simon?
I think we did great.
As you can see, he's flying around, and literally within about 20 minutes, he would have completely forgotten his experience. The amount of data we're going to get out of this is incredibly valuable. We'll be able to know where it goes, where it breeds, where it feeds, and really, without what we just did to it, there's no way we're ever going to be able to prove it. This really is the only way of getting the data we need.
It's lovely to see him circling over us now. Looks quite relaxed now, doesn't he?
The vulture soars above trees lining the horizon.
Over the next few months, the young Rapel's vulture travelled huge distances, covering almost a quarter of Kenya. Simon and Darcy learnt that it was feeding mainly in protected areas, national parks and reserves, which are relatively safe from poisoning. Behaviour like this could be the key to its survival. Satellite tracking also helps us understand more about where vultures congregate to feed. And there's one place they seem to favour above all others. The Maasai Mara. It's July, and the Serengeti rains have come north into Kenya. Following them, as always, are the wildebeest.
A herd thundering across the plain, watched by a marabou stork.
But here, they face their greatest challenge. Crossing the Mara River.
An ungainly wildebeest throws itself into the water.
The combination of not being particularly bright and not particularly good swimmers means that many never reach the other side of the river, perishing instead in the murky water.
The stocky, dark grey wildebeest file down a sandy slope before jumping into the river. As they scramble towards the other side, they pass a drowned zebra. Filming them, Charlie pulls his eye away from the camera to watch them crossing.
This is just incredible. The number of wildebeest coming over the edge now is just... it's just hundreds.
They now form a dark ribbon moving across the water.
This is the moment every scavenger and predator in the Maasai Mara has been waiting for. And vultures have flown in from all over East Africa.
A white-collared vulture casts a cool, calculating eye over the scene as the wildebeest struggle to climb up the jagged rocks on the other side. A hippo stands nose-deep in the river, watching.
On the one hand, you've got this panic and fear of all the wildebeest piling in. And then on the other, all the vultures are just sitting amongst it, really quiet, really calm, waiting to be fed.
Perched high up in a tree, a handful of Rapel's griffin vultures are biding their time.
There's now a surplus of food, as the river swells with the corpses of the wildebeest.
One that's lying half submerged on its side in the murky brown water is slowly turned and dragged away by the current. Water cascading over a rock.
And as the waters rise in the rains, they're carried away downriver to the waiting vultures.
From the body of the wildebeest bobbing through the water to the vultures circling overhead. As they gracefully circle in unison, their dark silhouettes pepper the air, contrasting with the fluffy white clouds and blue sky. One vulture flies down past zebras towards the water, where the wildebeest is still being dragged downriver by the flow.
The bodies of up to 10,000 wildebeest have been recorded floating down the river in a single day.
On the shoreline, vultures are already claiming their prize.
And when they reach the shallows, they pile up and rot. This is what the vultures have been waiting for. It's the most important feeding event of their year.
A skeletal cemetery lies in the shallows, being picked over by dozens of birds, storks and vultures alike.
The hot sun and rotting corpses now turn these chalets into a soup of bacteria, and it's up to the vultures and marabou storks to clean it up. Vulture stomach acid is so powerful that it can dissolve metal. It's this adaptation that means they can eat even the most putrid meat and destroy dangerous diseases such as rabies, cholera, and anthrax. Diseases which could otherwise remain in the system and proliferate. But downriver, the carcasses pile up uneaten, left to rot in the sun, leaching bacteria and disease into the river. The result of East Africa's vulture decline is now starkly obvious.
Uneaten corpses.
Vultures have declined by 60% in the Masai Mara in the last 10 years. Not good when they're responsible for consuming around 70% of the dead animals here. Without them, the meat will just rot. Diseases will increase, as will scavengers such as jackals and hyenas. This will in turn throw one of the world's most important ecosystems out of balance. To be honest, I'm really worried. Deliberate poisoning of vultures is now increasing, not just in Kenya, but all over Africa. Extinction is beginning to loom. The problem is, if you really care, people like Simon Thompson are tragically rare. We might see vultures as dirty, filthy and ugly, but we need them. The more I've got to know them, the more impressed I've become. The veneer of ugliness that surrounds them has been stripped away. When I look at them now, their character, their swagger, their extraordinary design, I see beauty.
In slow motion, a vulture glides downwards with broad outstretched wings, their feathery tips fanned out like fingers.
I put a spell on you.
On the ground, flies buzz around a vulture guarding carrion, and two opponents violently clash.
'Cause you're mine.
With a dramatic swish of its wing, one bears down on the other, beating the weaker into submission.
Stop the things you do.
One forces another away from a carcass with beats of its powerful, muscular wings.
Watch out!
I land.
A lappet-faced vulture crashes the party with a screech, a pair of Rapel's griffins having a scrap. Then, beside a zebra carcass, a white-backed vulture landing on a competitor, then pecking its feathers.
I can't stand. I can't stand, don't put me down. I'm gonna spell on you.